This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Nice to be with you on a Wednesday. John McClain joins us about an hour from now for his weekly visit presented by hornsolutions.net. So Pete Thamel is a college football writer. He covers college football for Yahoo. He does a nice job. This was a pretty extensive exercise that he partook in here, Seth, to get the takes of college football coaches on this recent draft. And I think, you know, you and I spent the previous segment talking about the opinions of people who watch film or beat writers for different teams that maybe are plugged into their team but not totally plugged in around the league, sort of firing off report cards, some of which are probably quite willy-nilly, let's face it. You know what I mean? When you cover just one team and you're asked to do a report card on all 32 teams' drafts, very, very inexact science. These are 100 college football coaches or assistants across the 10 FBS conferences. And I like this because he kept it pretty simple. It's not real scientific. It's really what he categorizes it as is sort of just sitting at the bar kind of talk about players. Hey, who are you surprised fell in this draft? You know, who are you surprised maybe slipped? And you come away with this as sort of the all underrated team, you know, and it's, you didn't have them fill out ballots or anything like that. He just had conversations with them where they brought up different players, and Thamel kind of gathered all the intel and said, okay, well, these are the ones that feel like they were mentioned the most when I talked to these coaches, and he consolidated some of the comments as well. So if you're a Texan fan who's trying to feel better about the team's draft, I would tell you that this was a beneficial exercise if you're trying to feel better about the draft, because two of the players that Nick Caserio chose in this draft were widely thought of amongst this constituency of college coaches as underrated. Surprising that they slipped as far as they did. And the really good news, Seth, is that one of them is the quarterback they picked in the third round. He did it in an all underrated team type of format. So a quarterback, two running backs, an offensive line, a tight end, and so forth. Davis Mills was the quarterback on here. So of the, you know, I think there were probably 10 or 12 quarterbacks drafted in this draft, somewhere around there. Davis Mills was the one that repeatedly during this exercise had his name mentioned as somebody that these coaches were surprised slipped as far as he did. Here's the comment on Davis Mills. This is sort of a consolidation of comments from a few of the coaches. I think he's a steal. His game fits the NFL really well. With the offense the Texans run, he really gets through his progression. Or with the offense that Stanford runs, he really gets through his progressions. He's decisive. He has above average ability to anticipate and hit windows. His game can translate quickly to a pocket passer.
Yeah, I guess the one that I wonder about that sticks out there is when he says with the offense they run, he really gets through his progressions, because the resoundingly unanimous appraisal from a lot of talent evaluators and whatnot was that he's a primary read guy, you know, and he still needs to develop that part of his game. So I do wonder, you know, part of that offense is, I guess sometimes the progressions are kind of built into what your options are, and that it, maybe he's really good at operating like the primary function of that offense. So whatever his first read is or his first decision is, he gets rid of the ball really fast. I think that beyond that, he's got to develop a little bit of patience and a little bit of time to let things develop. And if not even necessarily going through the progressions, because it's not that part of the game has evolved and changed somewhat. It's most offenses now, it's not like, okay, number one, number two, number three, number four. It's going to change based on coverages and half field reads and all that. But I think just being a little bit more patient is what he needs to work on.
Yeah. So that's Davis Mills, the other Texans player that found its way into this exercise at tight end. And I don't know how many tight ends were drafted, but of all the tight ends that were drafted, the one that this constituency of coaches, 100 coaches, the one that had his name repeatedly mentioned by these coaches enough to where he was mentioned the most is Brevin Jordan, the tight end that the Texans took in the fifth round. And I'll remind people that John Harris, whose eyeballs I trust greatly when it comes to this process, had Brevin Jordan rated as his 37th best player overall in this draft. 37th best. He was drafted 147th by Nick Caserio. Here are the quotes from the coaches in this exercise that Pete Thamel did. I love the way he moves for a tight end. He's way more talented than a fifth rounder. The way he can flex out and play receiver complements the way that the game is going. He reminds me of Evan Ingram, New York Giants, and could be a strong red zone weapon.
I think that his run after the catch really does stick out. He looks like a guy that looks like the modern George Kittle type of tight end that's just going to bull over safeties and cornerbacks when they're in their path. Kittle gets a little too much credit for mowing down people who are much, much smaller than him. That's like Andre the Giant in The Princess Bride or something. Okay, yeah, it's impressive, but I mean, I'd like to see it versus another Andre the Giant sized fella
right before
you. But anyway, that's what you want to see, is a guy that can run after the catch. And then for a young quarterback, because either after Tyrod Taylor, it's either going to be Davis Mills or it's going to be somebody you draft next year. The run after the catch can be very, very big, because then it opens up the shorter and intermediate routes more to offensive coordinators, and it makes easier throws for quarterbacks to get some of that run after the catch. And I think there might be a little of a theme going here too, because one of their undrafted free agents, Marlon Williams out of UCF, I just watched a little bit of him yesterday. I would say that's his biggest strength too, is running after the catch. He's just a big, he's only 5'11", but he looks like a bigger, more physical guy than that. Because he runs after the catch really well, breaks tackles, isn't afraid of contact. I think Nico Collins, same way. I think if there were a theme, and maybe this is just happenstance, but just thinking of these three guys between a tight end and two of the wide receivers that are going to be new to the team, they impress with their physicality. And whether, you know, is that a New England thing? I think it is a little bit. Yeah. I think that one of the things that sets apart guys in New England and why they're able to get more out of less sometimes with their players is that they take guys who love the physical element of the game.
Yeah, the thing I like about Brevin Jordan, independent of all the physical traits, Seth, especially compared to the other tight ends, think of the other tight ends that are on this depth chart right now. I'll put Farrell Brown aside because he's a street guy they picked up last year. He did some nice things. But specifically, Jordan Akins and Kahale Waring, two tight ends that they have used third-round picks on in recent years. You know, Jordan Akins was a baseball player who got into football collegiately kind of late, and a lot of his third-round selection was based on speculation. You know, we met him at the Senior Bowl. That was the year the Texans coached at the Senior Bowl that year. Hey, we met him at the Senior Bowl and we really liked him when we met him. We think he can turn into something. Kahale Waring was a water polo player who played very little football coming up. Brevin Jordan is a guy who's been a starter since he set foot on campus at Miami. He's a younger player as opposed to, you know, say Jordan Akins, at least, who was 26 when they drafted him. And he's a guy who, just from the quotes we were playing earlier this week, he's kind of a football junkie. You know, he gets asked about the game, the guys he patterns his game after, and they were all guys who's, other than Aaron Hernandez, they were guys who played in the late 90s and early 2000s. Dallas Clark,
brought up Dallas
Shannon
Clark.
Sharp, Antonio
Dallas
Gates.
Dallas Clark, I think, had his coming out party versus us. I think his first big game might have been against the Texans.
Yeah, so. But
I've got bad memories. It makes me feel old, and then I also just have bad memories of him
Pavlovian
in 2003
stuff.
Going off versus
PTSD.
Us. I remember Jay Foreman. It was versus Jay Foreman. I think Jay Foreman got stuck trying to cover Dallas Clark down the seam, and that's when we all learned that might have been the first instance of some nondescript white dude from Indianapolis torching us, because it became an annual rite of passage. Yeah, some nondescript white boy would just crush us. and we just it got to the point where we'd start trying to seek him out on the sideline before the game. I've never heard of that white dude before. Watch him.
Yeah. Well, his rookie year was 2003, so he came in right about that time where the that was the Texans' second year in existence. So I'll look that up. But anyways, Brevin Jordan and Davis Mills both showed up in this exercise. Guy, you know, coaches who presumably have coached against them or had to scout them or recruited them maybe back in the day. Very surprised that Mills was there in the third round and certainly the Jordan was there in the fifth round. So
he was inactive for both games versus the Texans in 2003.
Okay.
So it would have been later. He obviously didn't break out until later in the because he's only active for half the games.
Oh, I know the game. I'm looking at it right here. it's 2004. It was November 14th, 2004. He had three catches for 102 yards and two touchdowns.
I told you.
Three? He's a tight end. Three for a buck 02.
Because the previous year he only had 29 catches for one touchdown. So we weren't really thinking too much about Dallas Clark.
Yeah.
And then he went up. What was his long? Was his long like a 50-yarder in that game?
Yeah. Hang on. I'm looking it up right now. Receiving Dallas Clark. God, I. My eyes. Yes, his long was an 80-yarder.
All right. Poor Jay Ford. We're going to have to get Jay on the line because Jay after the game was hilarious talking about
He only had three catches, but one of them was for 80 yards.
I know. And Jay was there. Jay had the best seat in the house.
Dude, you want to know who really went off in that game? Brandon Stokely.
He had
it was white boy fest extraordinaire that day. Five catches for 132 and two touchdowns.
I just realized this is why I hate Indiana so much. It's the same reason you hate the white point guard in college basketball. There's something about the nondescript white guy from Indiana feels too much like the scrappy white point guard in college basketball. I've got white on white violence versus these guys. And there's no pastier white team than Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah.
They're not just white. They look like so vitamin D deficient.
No, they're Casper
because they play a dome. They play in a dome in Indiana.
No sun. Yeah. No sun. Let's see if Seth Payne did anything in that game to stop the bleeding here. two tackles.
My pass rush. Wasn't
two tackles.
Two tackles.
Yeah, two tackles. Yeah. Kylie Wong forced a fumble in that game though. So there's that.
What was the final score?
49-14.
well, clearly,
David,
Sean, it's hard to tackle people when they're 80 yards downfield. Okay, all right. Look, I hustle. I'm a lunch pail guy with a high motor, but I'm not a magician. Okay, I can't teleport my way.
It
down
ain't a Lamborghini motor. All right.
Yeah.
David Carr, not a great day. 22 of 41, three picks, sacked five times.
Another white guy in Indiana that day.
A bad day for white people. That
white
day,
guys
let me tell
suck.
You.
I was like, you got Seth Payne with two tackles. David Carr sucking it up. You got those guys on the Colts. They're all against Houston.
Oh, that is beautiful. All right, Hall of Famer. A Hall of Famer tells Aaron Rodgers, another white guy, by the way, that he should that he is
trying
weak,
to quit his job.
That he is weak. And he should retire. We will hear that Hall of Famer go off on Aaron Rodgers next. Terry Bradshaw is a Hall of Famer. He's a Hall of Famer who can be kind of bitter sometimes. He was on our sister station, WFAN, Moose and Maggie.
He's weird. He's weird because he's super rosy almost all the time.
Yeah.
But then when he gets mildly critical, he goes for the jugular.
Yeah, it's good for
like,
content.
Like not showing up at Chuck Knoll's funeral, jugular. Like even after the, he goes after a dead guy's jugular. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. He didn't show up at Chuck Knoll's funeral?
Hey, it's just Chuck Knoll. Yeah.
He's
had a frosty relationship with the Steelers for a long time. And I guess that includes, I wasn't really aware that he and Chuck Knoll didn't see eye to eye.
Interesting.
Boy,
four Super Bowl wins. You think that things would be all peaches and cream. I guess not. So anyways, here's Terry Bradshaw, who of course is on the Fox studio team during the NFL season. He was asked about Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Rodgers' demands of wanting to get out of Green Bay. Here's what he had to say.
I don't understand why he's so upset at Green Bay. And then if they fire the general manager, he'll come back. Are you kidding me? Really? Aaron, that's where this is. Here's what I'd do. I wouldn't budge. Let him gripe. Let him cry. Retire. You're 38. Go ahead and retire. See you later. I mean, I'm really strong about stuff like that. And it just makes him look weak. In my way of looking, it makes him look weak.
All right, so that's Terry Bradshaw on Aaron Rodgers. Those comments got a lot of traction yesterday, especially that last part, Seth, where he called him, basically called him weak and said, you know what, go ahead and, if I was the general manager, I'd say go ahead and retire.
Yeah. I don't know, because like those comments always don't sound as bad when you hear them, because he said it makes him look weak.
Did that sound tamer or worse than what it looked like transcribed?
I think that sounded about right. Yeah. I think it sounded about right. It was just, I guess it's worth pointing out, he didn't say he was weak. He said it makes him look weak. Yeah. But this is where I can think two things. One is, I don't mind when any player tries to exert any kind of leverage whatsoever, because that's the business. Like owners and management are always in an advantage, partially because they've just got more staying power, but also because there's always a little bit of a guilt factor they try to put into a player, where the management and owners are just, they're better business people than the players. And they try to guilt the players into pretending that it's not a business when it is. So they've always got a little bit of a morality edge there, because players might second guess themselves or feel a little bit selfish, even though successful business people tend to be some of the most selfish people on earth. So I always support a guy being willing to do that, but I also think that teams have gotten soft as hell. I think head coaches in the NFL have turned into some of the softest people in sports, because what they can't handle anymore is any kind of dissension in the locker room. I mean, you know, Sean, you go back to for decades and decades in the NFL, guys would get into physical altercations with coaches. Guys would carry guns into the locker room and flip. Like, there's some of the stuff I've heard about stuff that's gone on in the NFL, stuff I've seen with players, like disgruntled players bringing guns into the locker room because they were that angry. And you deal with it. Like, and now,
good old days.
Oh my gosh, my quarterback got a little emo on Instagram. I guess I have to just I have to say goodbye to him. So that's where. But because of that, usually, like with Deshaun Watson, I just kind of assumed, all right, well, now that he said that he wants to go, or at least he's had people say that he wants to go, I figured the Texans will do what every football team has done, is that they get soft and they just let it go. Because, oh no, social media.
Yeah.
You know what? Social media comes and then it goes and you're on to the next thing. Just that deal with it.
I think, Seth, though, the players smell blood a little bit from that standpoint,
yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, that they realize that lower or the lesser tolerance for dissension or drama, soap opera in the locker room, especially with quarterbacks. That's one position that at least the perception is that, boy, the quarterback's not happy. That's going to pervade the entire locker room, and the whole team's going to be infected by whatever this cancerous ethos is that the quarterback is bringing into the locker room. I think the players sense that a little bit. This is part of the process that everybody seems to think is going on with the NFL, where it's becoming a little more like the NBA, where quarterbacks are the equivalent of the star players, and they can force the hand of teams to move. Deshaun Watson was going to be the tipping point for that if he didn't have 22 women suing him right now. That was going to happen.
Right. So it's but I don't have any personal grudge against the player that wants to leave, but I also think that teams need to nut up a little bit and stop acting like such little babies about any kind of dissent. And the problem, Sean, is this. I'll go back to, it's TED Talks. It's guys like Jack Easterby. It's motivational speakers. It's this whole cottage industry that's built up around propagating a lie that there is anything such as this ideal culture, or that they're, you know, billionaires get rich and then all of a sudden start talking about how they did it for the love of things instead of actually just wanting to get rich. You know, they paint this rosy picture about everything, and you ignore the fact that every damn team that's ever won a Super Bowl has dysfunction on their team. Like, every damn team that's ever won a Super Bowl has players on the team that don't do things the way that you would write it about in the motivational, inspirational story afterwards. But they fall in love with a fairy tale. And they're letting a fairy tale dictate how they operate and how they go about building their football team. And it's just, it's soft. It really, I like, honestly, it's my generation. It's a, like, my generation is the problem because we're, we just, with like, most of the coaches are my generation now, and they can't handle any kind of discontent or anything. Just nut up and quit whining about it. Deal with it.
It sounds like
that's your job as a coach.
Yeah, it sounds like you agree with Terry Bradshaw in this whole thing.
Well, no, because I don't. Because I also get Aaron Rodgers' side of it too. I think if anything, like it, I don't think it makes Aaron Rodgers look weak. I think if Aaron Rodgers is doing whatever the hell he wants to do. If Aaron Rodgers, same as it goes with Deshaun Watson, if you're willing to sit out for a year and you're willing to pay the penalty back, you're not doing anything different than what teams do when they cut players. Teams cut players, there's a penalty to pay sometimes. You got to pay them their guaranteed money. You're going to take a cap hit. But that's the deal. Likewise with a player, if you choose not to play, you're not doing anything illegal. You just got to pay the penalty. So I don't think it makes them look weak at all as long as they're actually willing to follow through on their threats.
Do you think that Aaron Rodgers...
What I'd say is, like, honestly, it's I have no animus. Like, I have no hostility for the quarterbacks who decide to do it.
Yeah.
I'm just... They're doing what the teams do. I'm saying that the teams are soft in how they're handling it.
Gotcha.
Which I kind of like. I like that the players are exposing them for being as soft as they are.
Sure.
Like, the head football coaches are the biggest hypocrites on earth because they'll talk about toughness all you want, some head football coaches.
Yeah.
But they can't handle – they're not tough enough to handle a little bit of dissension in their locker room.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think that Aaron Rodgers is more upset right now that they drafted his replacement and he's got to sit in a quarterback room with his replacement, or – that the team has just, generally speaking, independent of Jordan Love, has not been run its best when it comes to player selection, roster construction. They routinely rely on him to bail the team out or raise the level of guys around him that were drafted in the third, fourth, fifth, sixth round.
I think it's both. I don't think it's easy to say, like, it's this one thing and not the other. It's obviously everything's combined. Like, think about it, anybody you dislike. Is there just one? Everybody I love has one thing about them that I dislike. But for the people I actually hate, multiple.
Yeah.
Multiple things.
What would bother, what would bother you more if you were Aaron Rodgers?
Well, it wouldn't bother me. I think they're codependent on each other.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't bother me. Jordan Love might not bother me as much if they'd also done a good job of drafting all these defensive players that they had drafted.
Yep.
Because you know what that is, Sean? Let's go back to the person that you dislike. Think about once you dislike somebody, almost anything they do becomes unbearable.
Yes.
You know, if it might be one thing if your best friend is tapping his pencil, you know, and has a habit of tapping his pencil. That might get on your nerves a little bit.
Yep.
But when the guy you despise taps his pencil, you want to jam that pencil into both his ears, you know,
yes.
And then make him sing a song about it.
Yep. Make him sing 713.
You do it. You'll sing a song about me jabbing a pencil in your ear.
Me stabbing your brain.
And then his singing voice annoys you.
Yep, that's right. Stop singing. But you told me to sing. 713-572-4610 if you want to get in, text or call. Up next, Texans fans can officially resume one activity that they have not done in over 2 years. We will do it next. All right, here's what we're going to do, because we saw that first mock draft from The Athletic come out yesterday, and Seth, I went and looked at it in much greater detail. I actually found one other mock draft for next year on CBSSports.com. This is where we are. This is the first time in a long time that we've been able to plan for actually picking high in the draft. You know, when the Texans, by and large, have been not a great franchise over the last decade and a half, but a decent one that's won some divisions, and even when they haven't won divisions, they've been sort of middle of the pack. Other than Clowney in 2014 with the number one overall pick, they haven't picked in the top 10 since, I think, 2007, 2006, maybe? You know, it's been a while. It's you know, they pick in the teens, they pick in the 20s. They traded the 2 years where they would have picked in the near the top. They had traded their first-round pick, you know?
Yeah,
so
O'Brien was almost like the epitome of that old NBA saying, which is the worst place you want to be is a 500 team.
Yeah.
You know, you either want to be great. And I guess that makes sense because everything's kind of working that way anyway, you know, towards either tanking or resetting or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
O'Brien was just, he was like a Jeff Fisher plus,
yeah.
Right? Would you say that, you know, Jeff Fisher was notorious for going either 7-9, 8-8, or 9-7? O'Brien had the benefit of a weaker division for some of those years, but he was Jeff Fisher plus one or two extra wins a year.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you don't end up picking high. And then when Jeff Fisher plus starts trading away all your draft picks, then that's when things get ugly.
That's right. So now, you know, look, and even when they picked high with Clowney in 2014, nobody was expecting that going into 2013 that they were going to be the worst team in football that year. Now we know what the expectations are for this team going into the year, so it actually makes sense to look at some of these things. Seth, so far, the mock drafts that I've seen for next year are 2-for-2. Both have had the Texans picking first overall. One of them had them taking the Athletic had them taking Spencer Rattler, the quarterback out of Oklahoma. The other one was a little more optimistic about Davis Mills and had them taking Kayvon Thibodeau, the edge rusher out of Oregon. Nevertheless, that's neither here nor there. Here's what I want to do, Seth, because we have not been able to look at mock drafts or even look at the process heading into next year in a long, long time. So I want to give the people who listen to you and I so that they can become smarter and sound smart with their friends, I want to give them sort of a guide to the 2022 quarterback/draft landscape that they can start to plan for these sorts of things, all right? And you can critique me on this here. Because there's a few things that people need to know. They need to know who the quarterbacks are that they're going to have to watch next year in college football. They're going to need to know who are the teams that have the most capital to trade for Deshaun Watson that could give the Texans multiple first-round picks in this draft, and who are the teams that could be targeting Deshaun Watson going into next year. All right, so let's start with just some names. We're not going to do deep dive John Harris analysis on these. These are the names that you need to know for college quarterbacks for next year. We mentioned Spencer Rattler, Oklahoma, Sam Howell, North Carolina, Malik Willis, Liberty. That is a name that is starting to get some buzz that you may not know, but I see him in the top 10 on a lot of these rankings.
Sean,
yeah.
Because that's not that well-known a name, I think you need to clarify Malik Willis from Liberty. That sounded like a really cool name, like Malik Willis Liberty. Liberty sounds like his last name
like
there.
A hyphenated name, yeah.
Malik Willis. Of Liberty.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Playing it's, for that's a, he's a dark horse favorite for a lot of people are saying, hey, watch this guy.
Could be the guy.
He needs to make some improvements. As far as Spencer Rattler, if we're talking about, like, we're just saying Bill O'Brien might have been Jeff Fisher plus, I worry sometimes that Spencer Rattler is like a more athletic Tom Savage. can throw it a country mile, but not necessarily rein it in or harness it. And with Sam Howell from North Carolina, the thing that's going to be really interesting to watch this year is he lost like four weapons to the draft. So we'll see, how do you do at North Carolina with probably not as great talent around
two here. Very good running backs in Michael Carter and the Williams kid that got drafted by Denver, really good player, and then his number one receiver got drafted as well. So you're right. So if you're drafting Spencer Rattler first overall right now, it's more like you're drafting Lincoln Riley than you are Spencer Rattler. You know what I mean? Like I feel like it's more based on Lincoln Riley's success with quarterbacks. So those are a few names. JT Daniels, Georgia, former USC quarterback. Keaton Slovis, the current USC quarterback. Those are all names that you need to know right now as far as potential quarterbacks for the Texans next year.
I'd like to just have a Yurkovich on here because the only Yurkovich I know of what's his name?
It's John. Your former
John
teammate.
Yurkovich.
Yeah. Well, I'll give one. Phil Yurkovich, Boston College.
Phil Yurkovich, Boston College.
Notre Dame transfer.
He's well built, whereas Yurko would tell you himself had one of the worst bodies in the NFL.
Sloppy, yes, indeed.
He was even worse because he had like the old school ACL surgery before they had the modern versions. It was kind of a minor miracle that he was still playing football.
But
his leg was all misshapen because they used to just basically take your whole leg apart and slap this over here and that over there, and it was a bad deal.
That's a shame. And he played in Jacksonville, where you get to go to the beach all the time, and he had to go to the beach with a leg that probably was grotesque and made people want to run away from him at the beach.
Yurko did not care. Yeah,
Yurko's
proud of
him. Yurko's
a man comfortable in his own skin, quite literally.
Very much. That's why he's a radio host up in Chicago. All right, so those are some of the names that you need to know if and when the Texans are going to be drafting near the top of the draft next year. All right, so Seth, the other part of the quarterback equation is trading Deshaun Watson. And I think you and I are both of mind that just purely from getting maximum value – from that standpoint, it's most likely that it makes sense to trade him before next year's draft, sometime in early 2022, as opposed to trading him this summer. It's hard to envision a better scenario than trading him before the draft. So if we're looking at teams that have multiple first-round picks next year, because those are the type of teams that we were looking at this year, Miami, the Jets.
And it's also worth pointing out, too, Sean, I mean, like, there's a lot of considerations here, but trading him before the season or in the season this year means that, let's say if you traded him to the Giants, their two picks all of a sudden are probably going to go down in value. They're probably going to win way more games with Deshaun Watson.
Yes,
a good chance.
If Deshaun's
so
on the team.
Yeah, why bother trading with the Giants now and worsening your draft picks that you'll get from them? Let them go ahead and really hate Daniel Jones by the end of the year and hopefully have better draft picks.
Yes, very valid point. Absolutely. All right, so these are the teams with multiple first-round picks. Okay, so are these teams that could be in the market for Deshaun Watson next year? Yeah. There are four teams with multiple first-round picks. The Giants, who have their pick, and Chicago's pick. The Eagles, who have their pick, and Miami's pick. The Jets, who have their pick, and Seattle's pick. And then the Lions, who have their pick, and the Rams' pick from the Matthew Stafford trade. So Giants, Eagles, Jets, Lions. Seth, of those four teams, I think at least two, well, I think three of them are going to be in the market for quarterbacks. I don't think Deshaun would go to Detroit. That's just my hunch. The Giants and Philadelphia, two very interesting Deshaun Watson possible landing spots.
I wonder if the Lions, who remember, Sean, they took Penei Sewell. I don't know, maybe they get a little bit of, maybe that's a little bit of an enticement for Deshaun if the offensive line looks better. And Dan Campbell, I think, can give a hell of a pep talk. Maybe that's just what Deshaun wanted. And he could get a deal with Ford Motor Company or something like that. he's not going to have the glitz of Miami, but he'll have a rock solid pickup truck endorsement. Maybe that's where we go. Jets, obviously no way, unless Zach Wilson comes down with some form of, if he doubles down on Sam Darnold's infectiousness and not only gets mono, but like some super breed of COVID and herpes, mono herpes, Kavana herpes.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably going to be there unless he does something bad.
Yeah.
The Giants would be very appealing to Deshaun, I would imagine.
The Giants are. So we had a texter bring that up yesterday, and I had not thought this through to next year yet. That's why we're doing this exercise right here. But the Giants, boy, if Daniel Jones is a failure after 3 years, the Giants are going to have their pick, which is presumably going to be a pretty high pick if he does fail. And then they've got the Bears pick too, which is probably not going to be a great pick. They might be starting a rookie quarterback. There's a lot to work, and it's New York, which presumably Deshaun would want to go play in New York.
Yeah.
There's a lot to work with there with the Giants.
Giants win total before the draft was 7.
Mm-hmm.
That was their over-under in Vegas.
Yep.
I don't know how much that was tweaked by the draft, but it's not just – there's a good chance that those are some pretty good picks with the Giants this year.
Yep, so those are the teams. So now you know the names of the quarterbacks that you need to watch in college this year. The teams that have multiple first-round picks that would seem to be good trade partners, Giants, Eagles, the Jets have multiple first-round picks, and so do the Lions.
Oh, and somebody points out that the Philly could have – wait, is Philly – is one of those picks from the Carson Wentz trade? If he
means No, that doesn't
That's
include
right.
Philly could have three first-round picks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Philly could have – oh, that would be pretty sweet. Ah.
So you want to root
and
by the way, they were a team that was a late dark horse for Deshaun Watson before all this legal stuff started popping up. You know, they were mentioned.
Keep track anymore, were they?
Yes, they were. They were mentioned as a possible landing spot for Deshaun Watson towards the very end.
I remember somebody called. Didn't somebody call us and ask if we could trade Deshaun for Jalen Hurts straight up?
Probably. Talk
and
radio.
I was polite about it. Yeah.
Now that I wouldn't mind.
Hey, I wouldn't mind getting Jalen Hurts back in the deal somehow. It'd be fun. You know, it's just at that point, when you're going to have a rookie quarterback anyway, presumably, then Jalen Hurts maybe with some experience under his belt might be a good bridge guy.
These are teams. This is the other list you need to know. Teams with young quarterbacks in make or break years. So Seth, these are teams with young quarterbacks who may say, you know what, we've seen this act for 2 or 3 years, we need to get in on this Deshaun Watson stuff. I think the good news is I think the Giants and the Eagles are both teams that fit that, and they've both got multiple first-round picks. I would add these teams to the mix as well. Carolina with Darnold. I think if Darnold doesn't work out, they could easily be back in on Deshaun Watson. Miami, could be right back in. They've got multiple firsts in future years from those 49ers, the 49ers deal. And Denver with Drew Locke, who we know they're going to be making phone calls to the Texans about Deshaun Watson, I think, as soon as he's available again.
Denver was mentioned to me as a team that this was early in the process before there was ever any hint of a lawsuit against Deshaun Watson. Somebody had mentioned Denver to me as a team that no matter what they did this offseason, they're still in on Deshaun Watson. So don't pay attention to what they do in free agency or in the draft or anything, that they're still going to be in on Deshaun Watson. Now, that was, I'm guessing, also before they knew Aaron Rodgers was available. That's a question in my mind right now. If Denver, I don't think Denver is really in love with Drew Locke. I wonder if now they see the possibility that between Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson, they're going to take a crack at one of those guys. And sometime in the next calendar year, they're gonna have Aaron Rodgers in the fold.
Well, let me ask you this. Because Bill Barnwell did seven trades for Aaron Rodgers. Seven teams that could trade for Aaron Rodgers. And he did what Barnwell does. He goes into detail and says, this is what the trade would look like with players and picks and the whole nine yards. Let me ask you this. If the Denver Broncos offered this package, this is what Barnwell says the Packers would get in a deal for Aaron Rodgers, and he mixes in Eric Stokes, their first-round pick, into this deal. But let's just say for Deshaun Watson straight up, because Watson's a younger player, would you do this deal for Deshaun Watson, Seth, from the Broncos? Patrick Surtain, who's the ninth overall pick in the draft, wide receiver Tim Patrick, a nice young wide receiver, quarterback Drew Locke, who's a throw into this deal to me. I don't know if he's the future. And then a first-round pick in 2022 and a first-round pick in 2023. Essentially three firsts, because they use the – as long as you're the Texans and you're cool with Surtain being the equivalent of a first-round pick in this trade, the best cornerback in the draft, plus a couple of players and two more first-round picks, would you – if Nick Caserio got the phone call in June, once – if Deshaun gets all cleared up of this stuff, they know what the league's punishment is going to be, they know what the results of the lawsuits are, and Denver is comfortable making this deal, should Nick Caserio say yes to a trade – a Patrick Surtain, couple more players, and two first-round picks for Deshaun Watson.
You're getting three first-round picks. Which one of those is not the Broncos pick? I guess that's how
they're
I
all
think
the Broncos picks.
They're all the Broncos picks.
Yes.
Okay. I think I would. I would take that three first-round picks. That's my price right now, is three first-round picks. I just get nervous. Look, if Deshaun's not going to play this year, I get nervous about trading him before the season. I'd rather just wait. You're going to get three first-round picks next year, unless new allegations come out about something else.
That's a good point. If anything, he's going to be more cleansed by the draft in 2022, image-wise and everything else, and he will. He could still be a distressed asset in July.
I've got this nightmare of trading Deshaun Watson before the season and diminishing the value of at least one of those picks because it's a first rounder being driven down, where next year you could get the team that's either in the position of the Jets or the Dolphins or whomever. I think, Sean, I think we had this discussion yesterday about whether this year was just the crazy year where there were so many good quarterbacks and you had these teams with multiple first round picks. I think it's going to become more common for three reasons. One, teams are just more desperate for quarterbacks, so guys are going to get taken higher. Two, I think the quarterbacks are better in some respects, even though they don't play in pro-style systems. They just get so many reps from the time they're in high school through college now that even if guys that don't get a lot of starting experience, guys in college now that have 1 year of starting experience sometimes have still thrown the ball more than guys that had 2 or 3 years of starting experience 20, 30 years ago. And then three, teams are just getting more and more liberal in trading first-round picks, or trading picks in general. Mm-hmm. So I think there's teams that amass them because teams are more willing to act like it's the NBA or baseball now. And I think that a multi-pick deal, multiple first-rounders, including two in the next year or what have you, is still available.
Yep. All right. So that's your guide to – your early guide – to Texans quarterback situation, rooting and spectating. We gave you the list of quarterbacks: Rattler, Howell, Willis from Liberty, JT Daniels, Jerkovic from Boston College, Keaton Slovis, USC. We gave you the teams with two first-round picks who had seemed, and Philly might have three. If Carson Wentz has a decent year in Indianapolis, Philly could wind up with three first-round picks. The Giants, Eagles, Jets, Lions, those are all teams with multiple first-round picks, teams with young quarterbacks in make-or-break years who would seemingly be in a Watson marketplace next year. Giants, Eagles, Panthers, Dolphins, Broncos, at the very, very least.
That's the part that we didn't really get into. That's why I was asking where one of those picks from the Broncos was. Like, mm-hmm. you gotta also look at, okay, with the Eagles, how good are the Colts going to be this year with a new quarterback? I'm hoping that Carson Wentz still sucks. But then that's the problem. If he sucks, you want him to suck, but not bad enough that he doesn't trigger the first rounder.
Yeah, the first round pick is just based on number of snaps. So the ideal situation would be that he plays a lot and is really terrible.
Yeah, because then that Colts pick is a high pick.
Yeah.
So everybody cheer for Carson Wentz to not just suck, but to suck for enough games that Philly team becomes one that's in the mix.
Strike a balance of sucking where he doesn't suck so bad that he gets benched.
You know what we got to do?
Yeah.
I hope the Colts are the last team on the roster, or the last game on the
schedule.
And we got to, like, as a team, we have to not just lose, but really be sure we highlight Carson Wentz in that game.
Yes.
And just get him a whole lot of, be sure they don't try to pull him. Like, give him a chance to break a record. So that, like, he's going to throw for 700 yards. So there's no way they'll pull him out of the
game. We've done the Colts history earlier in the show. If history is any lesson, he'll get a chance to break some records against the Texans. Hey, let's get some headlines in here before the top of the hour.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right, so the Astros lose last night to the New York Yankees, the much-anticipated matchup between the two teams that were in the ALCS playing each other back in 2019. They've not faced off since then until last night, and the Yankees win. The Yankees got to Zach Greinke early in this game. Greinke settled down a little bit in the game, still only went four innings. Ultimately, the turning point in the game was an errant throw by Alex Bregman with the bases loaded and two outs. You know, I believe it was the sixth inning when that happened, and the Yankees end up tacking on four runs. That was all they needed. They end up winning 7-3 in a game, Seth, that probably the final score may be a little deceptive in terms of how the game played, because as we just illustrated, three of the runs came in on a throwing error that would have ended the inning. The Astros hit the ball hard a few times. Yuli came an inch away from hitting a home run that would have given them a lead. I guess maybe Zach Greinke's performance was the only thing, especially early in the game, that was a little bit disturbing. But Greinke said, even though he threw over 30 pitches in the first inning wasn't as bad as it looked.
Really pitched LeMahieu good. Stanton is swinging good. So he hit a homer, and then after that, walk some guys. I can't really remember too much about it. It's kind of like a soft hit, and then a couple good at bat walks. But felt fine. Just they were doing good at the beginning, and then I kind of got out of started pitching worse later in the inning, and then ended up doing fine getting out of it.
I love Greinke. Half of Greinke's analysis of things is this guy was doing good. I was doing good. This is good. Nothing to be alarmed about, I guess, with Greinke. You know, he's been solid enough for the Astros this year. I just hated seeing Yankee fans walk away with any degree of satisfaction last night, Seth.
It was disappointing. We're one game with 102.
What's wrong? Oh,
I'm sorry. I had my 2019 ALCS championship ring. I was in my mouth. Sometimes I forget, and I was trying to talk with it. I like to just suck on it every now and then. You know, just like I encourage Astros, just like I encourage Yankees fans to, you know, go ahead, suck on this ring here. This ALCS championship ring.
That's right.
So. I don't remember how the Astros got it necessarily. I just remember it was pretty cool.
Yeah,
and it was completely.
Call the
clean.
Yankees being involved in some way, but I
yeah, know. Yeah, yeah. Greinke not sharp at all.
Yeah.
We got to see a little bit of an Ephus curveball. That was nice. That was cool. We got a little bit of. I thought early on when Greinke was smiling a little bit, the umpires sucked all night long, and Greinke was a little upset that a couple of strikes weren't called. I thought maybe, okay, we were in for something special because he had that look, just that little look of Greinke not giving a damn. But it was not to be.
No.
Nobody was really all that sharp last night. Each reliever walked at least one guy. It just wasn't to be. The one really encouraging thing for me was that right from the get-go, it was as you would have expected, Alex Bregman does not give a single damn about whether you're booing him or not. And maybe he does, but he's going to just shut you the hell up about it.
Yeah.
Because he cranked one out of the park immediately. I was also, it was nice to see Brantley get into it a little bit.
Yes.
Because Brantley, Yankees fans, I'll give them grudging credit, is for the most part, they were mostly booing the infield from 2017. I think some of them were.
Those are the only guys still left from
that
team.
Yeah, I think some of them were a little too dumb to boo Yuli, but they definitely knew Bregman, Correa.
They booed Yuli's brother in spring training. Yeah, remember that?
That's where I think the casuals kind of they were probably booing Yuli's brother, and then so everybody said like, "Don't boo Gurriel, you moron." So those people were at the game. They're like, "Oh wait, are we not supposed to boo Gurriel?" I guess I was told that. Wait, there's two of them?
Hey, okay. Are we sure they didn't boo Biggio's son in spring training? Can you imagine?
I'm sure they did.
Oh, it's Biggio! Yeah. He cheated. No,
he taught wasn't him on how to do it.
He wasn't on the team, and that's
generational.
His kid.
but they. Did you notice Gurriel in left field? Or excuse me, not Gurriel. Brantley in left field the one time. There was that hard hit foul ball. Brantley went over and. And I guess he must have, like, he was going to act like he was going to throw it into the left field stands.
Oh, he deked him?
He just threw it. He threw it at the wall. So they started booing him lustily after all that. I didn't expect to see that out of Brantley. That was kind of fun.
Okay.
Brantley's sticking up for his guys.
Sticking up for his guys. But if you're going to do it in a way where you're kind of taunting their fans, then I'm okay with Yankee fans now putting him on the list. If Brantley is saying I'm right, and I admire Brantley for riding and dying with his guys, but if you're going to put your name on it like that, and that's the equivalent of putting your name on it, then he gets what he's got coming to
him.
Well,
he's kind of stuck, because what are you going to do? Like, they're not, like, for the most, like I said, for the most part, they're booing the Astros, but the guys from 2017 were getting it the roughest.
Right.
But what are you going to do? You're there. Like, it's one of the most hostile environments you've been in. Are you just going to go ahead and bootlick the fans? Yeah. No, don't throw. I support Michael Brantley and not throwing the ball back to him. And honestly, I'm actually a little bit surprised that the Yankees fans make a distinction between 2017 and 2019 in everything except Altuve's walk-off.
Yeah.
For some reason, they'll accept that the cheating wasn't going on in 2019, but somewhere in their brain, they're still convinced that Altuve was wearing a buzzer in 2019.
They have irrational hatred for Jose Altuve, the least hateable human being on the planet.
I know.
You know, it's
really
just
sad.
Yeah.
Somebody's gonna have to do a rock opera about this someday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tragic thing. At some point, I think ultimately when all the dust settles, and I think everybody's got to get their pound of flesh this year and feel like they're making it hard for the Astros. I think when everything settles down and some stories are told and some books are written, Altuve will ultimately be not vindicated because he didn't put a stop to it, but I think people will realize that most of the evidence points to Altuve, Kemp, and Reddick not participating in the cheating, and then maybe they'll be able to let it go. And maybe it'll help them heal a little bit when they realize that, no, Judge did not deserve the MVP in 2017.
Seth, the thing that people really want your take on, I think, and I feel like you're uniquely qualified to give your take on this because I am a diehard Star Wars nerd.
Yeah.
And I think people who don't like or aren't familiar with Star Wars got super annoyed and triggered last night because it did bleed into the telecast quite a bit. Your grade or your assessment, your take on Star Wars broadcast last night.
Okay. Ravitch just annoys the hell out of me because he's just misinformed a lot of the time. There's something about baseball where guys like Bob Costas or Carl Ravitch think they can just drop in without doing any homework whatsoever, and it drives me insane. So that is what it is. It made it worse that was he even trying to look like Luke Skywalker? I mean, he was wearing that robe, and that's about it, which could have been any robe from Kmart.
Yeah.
I'll say that. And then who was in the studio? That was
Tim Kirkjian was Yoda.
No, in the studio.
It's
Darth Vader.
That was Steve Levy.
Steve Levy.
Yeah.
That costume just looked like a cheap one that they picked up.
I'm glad you brought that up. Sorry. That was the part as a Star Wars fan that I was most taken aback by was this is Disney. Like, they're both owned by Disney.
Yeah.
These are like some dime store costumes that they're wearing right now.
Either that or it's what you can pick up at the Star Wars virtual reality Disney or something. So
the
like
walking ad.
But come on, no, do it up. Like, give them the actual Hollywood stuff.
Right.
It looked really cheap. Like, you know, when I saw that, as soon as I saw Steve Levy, I thought to myself, wait, this is how they're going to do it?
Yeah.
Like, this is one of the most billed baseball games of the year. And, okay, you're going to do it because it's May the 4th be with you, and it's a Disney company and all that. But this is how you're going to do it?
Yeah.
Turchin wearing the Yoda mask, I kind of respected the game that he kept the mask on even when he was off camera.
Yeah.
And line of the night was, what are the figures with the glowing eyes?
Jawa.
Called?
It's a Jawa. That was
the Jawa.
That was,
when the Jawa said... Yeah, when the Jawa said that he didn't realize that Tim Kirchin was wearing a mask. That was pretty funny.
That's pretty good. It's a little like a face made for radio, but not bad. Not bad.
Other than that, though, it felt a little too much like preseason baseball or third inning of a home broadcast on a Tuesday where you're, you know, talking to the promotions person about stuff you got coming up. Because there was a lot of talking about non-baseball stuff during the baseball game, and that was annoying.
And it was a highly anticipated, lot of drama regular season game, and we're talking about Jawas and force plays right in the middle of it. Yeah. Well, the game's tied. We're talking about it. All right, real quick before we get to McClain, did you see that Lonnie Johnson is changing his number? He's changing his number to number 1 from 32 to 1.
It's a bold move.
You're allowed to wear single digits now if you are a wide receiver or a cornerback or, you know, other positions.
It's an extremely bold move. In football, there's no protocol regarding this yet. You know, there's no precedent or tradition for it.
Yeah.
So I guess nobody was stopping him from going and claiming number 1.
Yeah.
Number 1 not as popular in football as you would think it would be.
No.
Yeah.
But my son texted me his analysis. My son James texted me his analysis yesterday. I actually screen capped it, posted it on my Twitter feed, and Lonnie Johnson replied to it with a laughing Michael Jordan gif. Let me see if you agree with this, Seth. This is my son James. If Lonnie Johnson is going to be number 1, he's got to be raw next year. Can't be mediocre at football and be number 1. Got to get his Madden rating to at least 85. So Madden rating, that's the analytics that the kids use these days. Got to get your Madden rating to at least 85 if you're going to wear number 1.
The only, okay, so let's see. The first three that pop to mind are Warren Moon, Michael Vick, and Cam Newton.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm missing
Vick
a ton
one
more.
Or was, I thought Vick was 7.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, Vick was 7. Yeah. So Cam Newton and Warren Moon.
Yeah.
I feel like Vick was one at one of it after he went to Philly.
He might have. Nah, I think you might be right.
Whatever.
Yeah. No, I think he was one with Philly. I think you're right.
But okay, but he's not the icon. That's not his iconic number.
Right.
So Warren Moon and Cam Newton, and I'm blanked as to anybody else that has number 1. It's not
Tua.
It's not near. It's I'm talking like
you said anyone. I'm just giving you.
No. I know. I guess as far as like really good football players.
Right. Right.
So yeah. Tua's one of them. Yeah, why is one not more popular in football?
Well, for one, the only players that could wear it up to this point were kickers, punters, and quarterbacks. So now you're going to get some guys wearing it that are wide receivers and running backs and things like that.
Wide receivers weren't allowed to wear the single digits. I thought they just got lumped in there as, that's weird.
Yeah, yeah. At least in recent years, they haven't been able to.
And I wonder why, why more number ones don't wear it in football? It's that stupid football mentality of like, don't be too cocky. Don't call too much attention to yourself.
Well, I mean, that's kind of my son's analysis. If you're going to wear it, you better be raw.
Yeah, if you're going to be a pioneer of the one.
It's a lot of pressure, man. It's a lot of pressure.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.